The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour 3, G-Bag Nation 105.3, The Fan, thanks for making us part of your day. Okay, we got a football fix here. We have college football Darty coming up in 20 minutes. And then I'll tell you why Christian Parker and Clayton Adams made this list of NFL assistants. That's what's in store here for you over the next hour. Thanks for making us part of your day. Rangers pregame's coming up at 6:30. Here's Wolchuk.
Oh, man. All right. The dream has come to an end. We'll talk about that right after this.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir.
Wrong side!
Left side!
Wrong side!
Left side!
I use these for acid indigestion.
So what are we going to use these for?
Intimidation.
You know I got to get my fix, man.
Oh, my goodness. I'd like to give a lot of praise to our South Beach correspondent, the great Eric Chiafalo. He called this as All-Pro linebacker Jordan Brooks is getting a three-year $51.3 million extension with the Miami Dolphins. So the trade dreams.
Yeah, the trade dreams are over
kaput
there.
Yeah.
It's sad. Yep. It's really sad. That was going to be a great opportunity at the trade deadline for you.
Gosh. So what about the second-round pick, Jacob Rodriguez?
Do you think they're going to draft him in the second round and then flip him for...
Draft and trade?
Flip him for a third-round pick at the deadline?
I think that's a good win. I don't know. It's weird to me. I really didn't see this one coming because of what they did with Kyle Lewis and Rodriguez. I'm like, okay, they've drafted two linebackers, but I guess they do like Jordan Brooks. They're going to go with the All-Texas Tech
There's
linebacker.
Nothing stopping them from trading him, you know? Yeah. And maybe they weren't going to be able to be assured he would play for them or be a training camp holdout, although he has said all the right things about wanting to be there for his team and his teammates and not wanting to send the wrong message. I mean, he is an ideal leader to have for a young team. But I just think that at this point in his career, he has earned getting another contract before the season starts, and injury is a serious threat to him at this age.
Yeah.
So if I'm the Dolphins, I'm like, we're securing the asset so we can trade him if Jacob Rodriguez is as good as we think he's going to be, right?
Yeah, and $35 million guaranteed. He's now the sixth highest paid inside linebacker in the NFL just in terms of total contract value and average annual value. I don't know if maybe the deal turns the Cowboys off. I don't know. I mean, maybe they liked having him on a cheap.
I'll say this about the Dolphins. You guys are kind of talking about linebackers and Jacob Rodriguez and stuff.
Yeah.
I'd watch Kyle Lewis at that place.
Yeah.
I'd watch the linebacker from Pitt that they drafted in the fourth round last year. Kyle Lewis is he's gonna do some really good things.
Good player.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He's an undersized. You probably could play him at safety. I mean, he's got that kind of ability, that flexibility and stuff. When that pick was made, I was like going, damn, I was kind of hopeful that Dallas would grab a guy like this.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, they've got some linebackers now here with the Dolphins to look at, you know, if that's the case. Got to keep an eye on them and see which way they're going to go.
All right, let's talk linebacker and the linebacker the Cowboys did draft, and that's Jayshon Barham. Now, I've heard the Barham and the Barham. I reached out to Nick Harris, and I was like, okay, Nick, you're my go-to guy with the name pronunciation because he's very into this, and he wants to make sure he gets it right.
Thought you were going to text Sham.
Not so much.
Barsham?
Barsham. It is Barham. It's weird. It's like two different words, but because like I've been saying both, and I'm like I don't know which one's right. But Nick Harris is going with Jayshon Barham. I've also gotten out now, and I love you, Nick. But if indeed we find out in hindsight it's not that, Nick, blame's on you, bro. Okay.
Hey, I like what you're doing.
Jayshon Barham is listed as the rookie to watch. Five rookies to watch from Ben Solak. He's got C.J. Allen, who we talked about a lot leading up to the draft, the Georgia linebacker. Maybe the Cowboys would look at him possibly in the first round. Then he had that little injury scare. He had the workout that didn't look too good. He ends up going to the Colts. Zachariah Branch, wide receiver with the Atlanta Falcons, is on here. Logan Jones, center for the Chicago Bears. They need a center. They're hoping he can step up. Josiah Trotter, linebacker of the Bucks, and then Barham, your Cowboys linebacker. Solak says, intriguing defensive shift underway in Dallas. You look at what they have at linebacker. They could be a little thin at the position, but Barham might change that. Started his career in college as an inside linebacker. Then he kicked to edge his final season in Michigan. Dallas plans to move the third-round pick back to stack linebacker. where plenty of snaps are now up for grabs. You got winners, you got Overshown. But because Barham has experience rushing the passer, he can fill the Zach Bond, Jahad Campbell role in Dallas. That is an integral spot in the Eagles' defense that Parker helped coach for two seasons. How often the Cowboys give Barham snaps in camp, and where exactly does he line up? That will be a sign of how first-year coordinators intend to call the defense with him involved. Caleb Downs, I think we're all pumped about, and we're all going to be watching. But I think we're in a line here, Eric. Jayshon Barham, we're out there, we're doing three live mics. Where's he at? How many snaps is he getting? Who's he rotating with? Because that could be a key cog in this Cowboys defense.
Yeah, I mean, filling that Zach Bond type of role. And I just love, like, when you just go watch him for a few minutes on YouTube, the physicality is amazing.
Those are always end up being your favorite guys. Like, yes. Donovan Wilson smacking people. Yes. He was your favorite player. Like, the dudes that come in here and are just like E-Hammer style. Just
bringing an edge to your defense.
Kicking people around. Like Roy Williams, I bet, was somebody that you loved when he first came into the league.
Yeah, just some headhunters out there. So, and with the versatility, I think that the stuff that he does, Christian Parker's going to want to do with the front and moving things and changing the look pre-snap, where it's, okay, Barham standing up there as an inside off-ball linebacker, and then boom, before the ball snapped, defensive line shifts over and he's playing on the edge, changing the front right before the ball snapped. Like, all that kind of stuff is huge. And you see across the league, there's plenty of these players now that are kind of these tweener. Is he a linebacker? Is he an edge guy? And Barham gives that. So I'm hoping he can hit the ground running in year one, because it'll provide some flexibility for Parker. And again, bring a tenaciousness to your defense that you got to have.
Yeah, and you need somebody that you feel good about behind Overshown, because I think D. Winters is kind of penciled in, and Brian giving us the report from OTAs and minicamps, like, that's the one dude they weren't taking off the field. Overshown was rotating, and I think there will be a large focus on that just to try and keep him fresh and healthy throughout the year. So you're going to need somebody that you feel good about stepping up and filling that role, and hopefully Barham, maybe it's Shamar James, but hopefully Barham is that guy that can do it, because I do like the style in which he plays with.
Yeah, and just how big he is. Like, Overshown, athlete, a little bit undersized. D. Winters, similar. This is a guy that brings you 240, 245 pounds of I'm ready to eat your lunch. Yeah. You know, getting off blocks, things like that.
You need that to play that hybrid role that I believe they're thinking about. Like, I think when they say they're moving him back to inside linebacker, the truth is it's much more of a blend of the two. Mm-hmm. They want guys who can set the edge close to as good as a defensive end and cover better than a defensive end and still give you stand-up linebacker skill set. And what that does for you is it allows you to change the roles of so many people that the quarterback's like, crap.
Right.
You know, I need a half tick here to figure out where everybody is now post snap, because it looked remarkably different. And you did see with several veteran quarterbacks, like, what it does to them is a real factor in determining winners and losers of every play. And if your quarterback's not willing to run, what he does is he ends up hanging onto the ball for a half second and having to throw it away, or, you know, and now he's under pressure.
And that's a dude that'll smack you. And you go back, and I know, Brian, you did this with that Eagles defense, and then that's where the same as you did, Gavin, that NFL Pro, where I can just look at all the Jahad Campbell snaps now.
Right.
And you could see that's exactly how they utilize that linebacker. Yeah. A lot of it is they're in the middle of the field pre-snap, but then the next thing you know, they're blitzing off the edge.
Right.
And so they do kind of become an edge rusher, to your point there, and Barham fits that skill set beautifully. So I think Overshown could do that as well, but Barham being a much more physical and big player. Most overrated, underrated quarterbacks entering 2026. This is from Garrett Podell, CBS Sports, friend of the show. Overrated, 877-881-1053. We got one text that came in from the 817. Herbert, overrated. Underrated, Jordan Love. Well, here are the overrated quarterbacks. You tell me, agree, disagree. Caleb Williams, overrated?
Yeah, he's the cover of Madden right now.
Yeah.
He was underrated last year.
Now he's overrated?
Yes, I think
we got the anointing oils out, as Parcells would say, a little too early.
It swung the other way probably a little bit too much, and I do think Caleb Williams is really good, but I think a lot of people are looking at him like, okay, is this going to be a guy who's going to be a top five quarterback?
MVP.
MVP candidate.
Yeah.
I'm not quite there.
He's somewhere between quarterback 12 and 15, Caleb Williams. Real quick, you mentioned the Bears drafting of Logan Jones, right, from Iowa.
Yeah.
They lost Drew Dahlman. right? Retirement early. They lost their left tackle, Ozzie Trapillo, who was amazing for them last year. They lost him in the wild card round to a devastating leg injury. He'll be out the entire year. Caleb Williams had one of the biggest splits in the NFL of clean pocket and chaos. And when it goes to pressure and having to improvise, Caleb Williams is bad. He makes big plays like that, but overall, playing on the move outside of the pocket, Caleb Williams is a disaster. They have to keep him on schedule. And when he is on schedule and playing from the pocket and clean, he was very good last year. So,
yeah,
you know, and then you look at their defense, which is really in transition, lacks pass rush. You
they
know,
lived off the takeaways last year.
They were 23rd or 24th in points per game allowed. Yeah. So I would say a reckoning is coming for Caleb Williams unless he's significantly better than last year. I have him third in the North. And yeah, Bo Nix is bad.
Yeah, Bo Nix, overrated.
Bo Nix is clearly the most overrated quarterback in the league based on what we just saw from the NFL players' top 100.
Yeah, 100%. Baker Mayfield on this list, overrated. I feel like Baker's kind of properly rated.
I agree. I think Baker's properly rated. You know he's solid, but nobody's talking about him being a total stud.
Like he's a perfect kind of transition quarterback. Like if you don't have one, this is a guy we could win with if we've got a good enough roster. Now maybe he isn't a perfect transition quarterback because I'm talking myself out of it here. If you want to suck and get a top pick, he's probably too good to be a team that's going to land a top 10 pick because he'll win 7 to 9, 10 games a year. But Baker, I think, solid overall.
Yeah, we know who Baker is now.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of teams would be happy to have him at his current salary. If you have Baker Mayfield at like 30, 35 million bucks, you are winning.
Mm-hmm.
If he jumps over 50, then I think his playoff days are over.
Underrated, and we start off with Dakota Rain Prescott, the number one most underrated quarterback in the league. He was third in passing yards. He was fourth in passing touchdowns. He was 10th in passer rating, 6th overall, and expected points added per dropback. Are we now at a point where Dak Prescott is underrated?
Didn't we just have the rankings from Jeremy Fowler that put him 6th? Yeah.
So the league,
if you got him at 6th, you're dead balls on.
Yeah, fair. The league, the perception might be a little underrated, like if you were just pull fans. Because there's going to, oh, I mean, we see it on the text. Cowboy fans, some are just dug out on Dak, and I get it. If Dak Prescott plays the way he did last year, and your defense takes a step in the overall roster around him, this is a team that can do some serious damage. And I do believe the bold prediction of reaching an NFC championship might not be so bold. That could become reality. Now, Homer, you want to call me that? Fine. Don't care. I think it could happen.
He's simultaneously underrated and has been overpaid.
Hell yeah.
Over the last 5 years.
That's true.
But yeah, I get it because there are so many fans and it's loud. Mm-hmm. You know, if that gets in your algorithm, it'll look like the entire world hates Dak Prescott.
Jordan Love and Trevor Lawrence, the other underrated quarterbacks. Love, I think, might be, and I might be guilty of it too. I mean, he's 6th in touchdown interception ratio last year, 6th in passer rating, 2nd in expected points added. And if we want to talk about supporting cast, I mean, the dude had a crap receiving core around him last year, and they were all banged up and they were all hurt. So Jordan Love has found like he still keeps his offense afloat and producing despite the parts around him just being decimated by injury or leading the league in drops and really just not living up to expectation. Maybe Love, and I give a lot of credit to Matt LaFleur. I do think he's one of the better offensive minds and play callers and offensive schemers, but Jordan Love is the orchestrator of all of it, too, on the field. So maybe he is underrated.
I mean, he has had some really good seasons. I do feel like he's not as good as Dak.
Oh, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's fringe. He can play like a fringe top 10 quarterback at times. I probably think he's in that 10 to 12 range if I were to have to rank him.
And I think his weapons are underrated when you include Tucker Kraft and include the running back and Christian
With
Watson.
Jacobs,
and,
yeah. See, it's just the health. Like Watson, when he plays, is great. He just can't stay healthy. Matthew Golden, big year for him. They took him in the first round. Can he step up and be that guy? But We'll see what happens this year.
We got to run. Thank you, old Chuck.
Thank you.
Terrific report, as always. Your football fix most afternoons at 4 o'clock. We got a college football darty coming up, Chief.
Yeah, let's check in with SEC Media Days and who coaches think is the best quarterback in college football next.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The nation,
welcome back, nation. It's time for a college football darty with the Chief. It's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car, truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There is never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. And here's Eric.
Yes, sir. SEC Media Days, plenty to get to from a college football standpoint right after this.
Looky here. Mr. Cold Turkey put a mini booze bottle in his headset.
I've never filmed any of you guys when you're using the bathroom, so I don't know what faces you make when you're doing that.
Special teams, fucking joke.
I want them never to say our name again!
Well, I don't get Dave, Rain Man, Cole.
Okay, we start with some good news. Missouri running back, all SEC running back, Ahmad Hardy, has fully healed after being shot in the leg back in May.
Okay.
And is progressing to return to the field.
Must not have hit any ligaments or bones.
Yeah, they haven't been super specific on exactly how much it got him, but it was enough to keep him down throughout the offseason, but now he's on track to at least be ready early in the season. I don't know if it'll be a week one situation for him, but certainly one of the best running backs in all of college football. It was a weird deal being at a concert over the summer, and he did get shot in the leg. They did say that the bullet struck one of his bones, so it was enough. It wasn't just necessarily a flesh wound. It was a little bit more than that, but
solid bone structure, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, he's well-built, heck of a player, and would love to see him have a fantastic season. Again, he was all SEC last year's outstanding. SEC Media Days, we learned a couple of things. Some new SEC-specific rules, including offensive pass interference, no longer going to be a 15-yard penalty. They felt like that was too punitive for an offensive pass interference. Drop you back 15 yards, it basically kills your drive.
Drive killer.
So they're making it a little bit less punitive and making it a 10-yard penalty for offenses. They were looking for a higher rate of success gaining a first down after incurring an offensive pass interference. So I'm okay with that. 10-yard penalty is still pretty large. 15 yards is, I can't imagine what the rate is of offenses gaining a first down after suffering a 15-yard penalty. But it's not one. Maybe they'll call it a little bit more now because of that. Because I do think there is a lot of the the pick routes and things like that, the rub routes that go awry for defenses, and they're looking around going, "Dude, are you kidding me? That should have been called." So maybe they call it a little bit more because of this. But instead of 15 yards, offensive pass interference, it'll be a 10-yard penalty in the SEC. And then the other one that we've all been clamoring for. I'm glad they're doing this. The targeting rule and the suspensions that follow. Generally, you're talking about you get a targeting penalty and then you're done for that game and then you miss the first half of the next game. And the SEC is saying, not going to do that if you're a first-time offender. The first time somebody gets hit with a targeting penalty, they'll be ejected for the remainder of that game. But then there will be no suspension for the next game. And then if you're a second-time offender, you'll be ejected from the game and then suspended for the first half of the next game. If you're a third-time offender, you're ejected from the current game, and then you're suspended for the entire next game. So that's how they're doing it. So the first time one of your favorite players in the SEC gets hit with a targeting penalty, yes, he's going to leave that game, but you'll see him suited up for the first snap of the next game.
Seems pretty common sense to me. I think overall I like it.
Yes.
I think the NCAA should copy it, but isn't it weird that the SEC is doing their own rules?
Yes, yes.
If I'm the NCAA, I'm like, okay, I kind of like what you're doing here, but I can't have the visual of you dictating to us what the rules of the country are.
Well, they got 9 conference games now, so they're probably looking
at most of their regular season schedule.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about the SEC, and I was just doing some digging on this, there's a couple of things I think came out of all this. The Power Four non-conference requirements of the SEC. Every SEC team is strictly required to schedule at least one non-conference opponent from the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, or Notre Dame each season. And they've eliminated the late season cupcake game, you know, where the SEC has banned the practice of scheduling a lower tier like Alabama playing Wofford or somebody like that. They've banned that. So they're trying to create that second to the last week in November, like more conference games.
I love that.
So, yeah, they're trying to force more high stakes games late in the year instead of, you know, LSU or whoever are playing, you know, this another opponent. We've had way too many of those games in November where we go through a conference schedule, then all of a sudden it's like, all right, now Stetson's on the schedule against Oklahoma or Florida or somebody like
that.
Yeah,
you hate that when you're in the thick of the college football season and then all of a sudden you just have a couple of dud games on a Saturday.
Yeah, and especially late in November.
Yeah, that's a September tune-up situation. Yeah. Don't need to see that. Yeah.
But the fact that the SEC says, okay, we're going to play nine conference games and we're going to make you play somebody from the Power Four,
mm-hmm.
and then we're also you can't play Stetson. I'm sorry, Stetson. I'm just using you because you get scheduled in these games. But that's what happened. The fact that they're trying to create matchups every single week that really do matter, I think they should be applauded for. I think more conferences should look into that.
Okay, so we have coaches at the microphone. We will start with the new head coach in Kentucky. Oregon's offensive coordinator, now the head coach at Kentucky. He's Will Stein. Tell me if there's anyone in the world more confident in themselves than this guy.
Why do you think you can win big here?
This is going to sound like really, I think because of me, to be honest. I think because of me.
He went on to explain himself a little bit more, but that's really the gist of it. He is, he's got some Kurt Cignetti type confidence. Worked out for Kurt.
It did.
Okay, so he's taking a page out of his book. Of course, you got to be confident if you're going to be running a program, especially one in the SEC in Kentucky that is usually a bottom feeder when it comes to the football. So we'll see if that comes back to bite him a little bit, but he's feeling really dang good about himself. Now you have Kirby Smart. Looks like Kirby has himself some bulletin board material.
Wanted to ask about the wide receiver room in particular. One of the bigger question marks, at least that I have, how would you assess the wide receiver room heading into fall camp?
I'm just very thankful for people like you, Steve, that keep questioning them, because the more you question them, the more it helps me motivate them. So everybody says that we don't listen to you guys. Well, the wide receivers are listening, so they'll have a new challenge issued based on your question.
Heck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
That's Kirby for you. That's what you want right there. I love the stones of that reporter being like, hey, I got to be honest with you. I'm side-eyeing a position group that you got there, Mr. Recruiter Man, Mr. Five-Star Guy, Mr. Championship Expectations, and then he just turned it right around on him. Kirby Smart's one of the best in the business.
Could the guy have asked the question in a better way, which would have allowed to get an answer from that, instead of like coming out, it was like it's a – I'm the one evaluating your room.
Yeah, I think your receiver room sucks.
Wedging your own opinion into a question.
Yeah, exactly.
Things can go sideways.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there's a way that he could have asked the question and said, you know, asking about the receiver room, but not made it in a way like he was the sole evaluator of this thing.
Now, Lucius, I believe we might have a new contestant to be your favorite player in all of college football, where yesterday it was revealed that OU's quarterback John Mateer is now driving a lowrider.
Let's go.
Oh, my gosh. Shout out to that fam.
No photos. Not sure exactly what it is.
I don't want to see it, bro.
A lowrider.
That is pretty dang sick there from John Mateer. Expectations are high, and we'll see how OU can fare here. But they're playing, you know, they're feeling pretty confident. Mike Elko is pretty dang confident in his guys when it comes to the Aggies. He's saying that when it comes to the back end of his defense, when it comes to the Aggie secondary, he's saying this is the best that they've had, the best secondary I've had in 7 years at Texas A&M.
Wow.
So
they've had some good secondary players.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
They had a lot of turnover on.
They might though
on offense.
That's the Elko special right there. I mean, certainly he's had some good recruits. They probably hit the transfer portal, but they just had a couple of good secondary players in this past draft. This song, I always think George Lopez, the intro to the George Lopez show.
Just not as familiar with that.
Really?
Yeah.
It's the group
I'm surprised.
War.
Oh, I love the song.
Yeah.
I did not know this was the intro song.
Yeah.
Nice. Maybe George. Now, we have The Athletic giving you the anonymous quarterback list according to coaches from around the country.
Okay.
And funny enough, in college football, we have general managers now. So this is coaches and general managers and personnel directors, scouts, front office staffers across the country, and they represent every single conference, and they have ranked the best quarterbacks in college football. Who do you guys think? Now, this has nothing to do with what they might do in the NFL.
Okay.
Right? So this is strictly in college. Do you guys think you could name me who they believe is the best quarterback in the country?
Dante Moore?
Dante Moore at Oregon.
Probably got Oregon, yeah.
Comes in at number two.
Oh, okay.
Is it Arch Manning?
Manning.
He's not one. He's not.
No.
Comes in at number seven.
Okay. That's fair.
He's actually behind our guy, Drew Mestemaker.
Well, Drew Mestemaker is going to be a freaking star.
They have Mestemaker.
So they got a good eye there.
Sixth in the country.
Wow.
Okay. Who is the number one quarterback in the country? Again, it doesn't have anything to do. Julian Sayin from Ohio State comes in at number five.
Is it their guy from Ole Miss?
There we go.
Oh, Trinidad Chambliss. Yeah, I kind of forgot he was back.
Yeah, he is back. He's back with a vengeance. Ole Miss is going to be fantastic. And Trinidad Chambliss, if he can be even better than what he was last year, I mean, my gosh, they have him as the best college quarterback in the country right now. It's Chambliss, then it's Dante Moore. Mm-hmm. Then, you guys aren't going to like this one, Notre Dame's CJ Carr.
Look, I couldn't show
wrong
about Carr.
There's no way.
I just don't see it.
You guys might have you eating crow at some point. Everybody's loving CJ Carr.
They're going to be eating crow.
Then it's Darian Mentz at Miami, Julian Sayin at five with Ohio State.
Thank you, Chief.
Yes, sir.
Why Christian Parker and Clayton Adams made this list of NFL assistant coaches coming up next here on The Fan.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you, Lucius. It is the G-Back Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Rangers pregame coming up at 6:30. Need a dub here to stay above 500. Really just need to play good baseball. You know, have good starts, have the lineup produce. Last night's defeat, pretty frustrating. They've dropped, what, 3 of 4 here, and need a victory tonight against Chicago with Kamar Rocker on the hill. Christian Parker and Clayton Adams make this list on The Athletic. Jordan Rodrigue. Is that how you say her name? Rodrigue?
I think it's Rodrigue.
Assistant coaches who could break out in 2026 for all 32 NFL teams. Pretty interesting read if you're trying to get familiar with who the rising stars are who could be candidates for your next NFL head coaches or coordinator spots. Clayton Adams and Christian Parker both make this list, and Jordan writes, it was impossible to decide between Adams and Parker, who combined to make as exciting a coordinator tandem as we'll see in 2026. Adams, a former offensive line coach, schematically blends modern physical run concepts with a high potential pass game. Parker's a disciple of storied Eagles, a DC, Dick Fangio, tasked with turning the Cowboys defense into a true threat. And those who have worked with Parker believe he can do it. Who's going to get the job first, guys? Parker or Adams?
I think Clayton Adams, after this year, has a good chance. I think, you know, Christian Parker, if they make a giant jump defensively, then maybe. But I think 1 year as a defensive coordinator is probably going to have to get a couple of more. But Clayton Adams is a guy that I think was being considered this year, and he's now part of that accelerator program that they did. And if this offense is as good as we think it is, Clayton Adams should be certainly on the short list.
Follow-up question, do you think a guy makes it to head coach without ever calling plays on either side of the ball? Has that ever happened?
Yeah, I mean, we just had Nate Shieldhouse this past year was almost getting the job. I think we've had some of these Rams McVay guys that end up getting those gigs. Same thing with the – was there an offensive coordinator from Shanahan that ended up getting one that didn't end up working out? Like, those guys don't end up calling the plays. Matt Nagy with Kansas City got the head coaching job in Chicago. He was under Andy Reid. I don't know that he was really calling the plays. So there's a couple of these guys that work under –
Actually, Andy Reid never called plays.
Well, Andy didn't.
Really?
Andy never called plays.
Wow.
Not for us in Green Bay. And then we tried to get Andy as the OC when Gruden left in 97. And then when that happened, Green Bay blocked us, but Andy never got to call plays. Mike Holmgren always called the plays. Sherman Lewis was the offensive coordinator. And then Mr. Lurie and Joe Banner hired Andy after, like, Ray Rhodes, yeah, after, like, 98. That's so 99, do you think
a team's hiring Clayton Adams to come in and be a CEO, head coach, and not call plays, or do both?
I personally think I'm the opposite. I think that Christian Parker gets the job before Clayton Adams does.
Because of the turnaround he's about to unleash?
I think what will happen is if this thing turns around like everybody believes it might, and the fact that Christian Parker – and all, say the guys that he brought in after he moved on for some guys and guys that he went out in the draft and all that, and then some of the free agency stuff, and you see them playing competent defense, they're going to see him as like, well, maybe this guy's got a good eye for players too. So all of a sudden now you have a coach that's a good coordinator, good with people, he's young, but he's got a good eye for players and the places he's been, and they're going to give him credit for, oh, look at the turnaround that happened in Dallas. I needed a guy like this. I just feel like it's probably going to be easier. He is more of a higher profile guy on this staff than Clayton Adams is.
Yeah, he has gotten a lot of buzz, hasn't he? I think that's a good point.
If this thing turns around, he is going to get a lot of credit. And it's going to take probably some shine away from Shoddy, but in a way that Shoddy could say, well, wait a minute now, I interviewed and hired the guy. You know, we gave him an opportunity, but I think that he has got more. If you ask people, well, who's more recognizable, even though he hasn't called defenses, you know, I think that people would recognize Christian Parker more than they would Clayton Adams.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Where would you vote, Chief?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I think you might have just swung me there a little bit, though, Broadus.
No,
because,
don't listen to him.
Like, Parker is going to be the face of the Cowboys defense here.
And either, it's going to be a turnaround or not.
Right.
Yeah.
But he will be the one that gets all the credit in the world for the Cowboys defense if he really can turn it around whenever he does it, especially if it's in year one. Yeah. But Clayton Adams, I feel like that everybody knows for the last decade, the Cowboys offense has been pretty dang good. When you start thinking about some of the best offenses in the league, the Cowboys are always there, and Clayton Adams has not always been there. So, and I think Clayton Adams deserves a ton of credit for what the offense was last year, and I expect it to take an even bigger jump here moving forward. But the fact that he doesn't call the plays, I think he gets missed in terms of the credit line, whereas Christian Parker, he's going to get it all.
Yeah, Dak's going to get a lot. The combination of CeeDee and Pickens is going to get a lot. Schottenheimer will get some. You know, maybe the offensive line plays significantly better, and, you know, Tyler Guyton, Tyler Smith, Tyler Booker, the Tylerses, as Vach calls them, hilariously.
The Tylerses.
Could you know, be given the credit for that. Coming up at 5:20, I'll tell you one thing. I believe Shoddy and Adams have to get right here in 2026 for them to be taken seriously by everybody, and it's not red zone. It's not penalties.
It's not red zone.
It's not red zone.
And it's not penalties.
It's not penalties.
Okay, I'm glad you gave us some time here to think about
this. Coming up in 30 minutes. Pro Football Focus has underappreciated moves from the offseason as we get set for training camp. Two of them are former Cowboys finding other teams. Topic is, did the Cowboys make a mistake letting these guys go? First one, Osa to the 49ers. Since 2023, Osa ranks 7th among qualifiers at his position in total pressures. His pass rush win rate's 5th. He is a fairly steady growth year over year with at least a 70 PFF rush grade in each of the last 4 campaigns. Former Cowboys presence will be a welcome one up the middle for San Francisco. The Niners' interior defensive lineman produced the worst overall PFF grade by a wide margin, including the fewest total pressures accrued and the 27th-ranked PFF pass rush mark. Team returned second-year talents Alfred Collins and C.J. West, but each
only earned a 35 grade as a rookie. So Osa is an oasis in the desert for San Francisco. And they're not only getting Osa, but they're getting Bosa back. They were 24th in defensive EPA per play last season. Definitely makes sense for San Francisco. Do the Cowboys mess up by letting a talent like this go, Chief?
No, not at all. I think they messed up by giving him the contract that they gave him originally. You're still able to get a third-round pick in return for him, so it all works out. But he was not going to be the type of fit in this scheme that Christian Parker wanted. And for as much as Osa does pop when it comes to the pressures, there were just so many times where you kept wanting more out of him. He never reached the level to which you thought he could, and I don't think he was necessarily worth that contract. He's probably better for the Niners in the scheme that they're in, but he does not strike fear to me. When we go up against the Niners at any point, you're not circling Osa as, oh my gosh, you got to deal with this guy.
So that's good stuff. In Seattle, they added a former Cowboys defensive lineman for the second straight season, going with Dante Fowler. And the write-up here, working on a bad Dallas defense, didn't hinder Fowler in 25 across 248 pass rush snaps. Registered a 72.8 PFF grade, 14.3% pass rush win rate. Both figures sat in the 72nd percentile. And he added an 85th percentile PFF run defense mark as well. So he was actually a guy capable of playing run and pass. Did the Cowboys mess up letting either of these guys go, Wolchuk and Broadus?
No. I mean, look, I think the Osa move, you netted a draft pick. They clearly had too much money in that defensive tackle room. They needed to make a change. And I like Osa. Last year was very disappointing. I thought his contract for the player he is and the production he's given you is actually pretty reasonable. I think he'll flourish in San Francisco, but the Cowboys didn't make a mistake. And Fowler's an every other year guy. Brad Sham told us that in the postgame show. Yeah. He's never had back-to-back years where he's been good. He might end up being tremendous in Seattle, but I don't think he was a great fit here with what they're trying to do.
After watching the way that Philadelphia plays their defensive tackles, he's a bad fit.
Well, thank you, Brian. Thank you, Wolchuk and Chief, for answering my Cowboys questions. I'll have more of those coming up at 5:20. And think, if you can, maybe try to guess it on the text. Just league average in this area of the game, not red zone. Got to get it figured out to be taken seriously. And maybe my hint here for you is Bill Walsh. Okay, Bill Walsh. We got three down, 90 minutes to go. The finest coming up next, Chief.
How many teams could realistically win the Super Bowl this year, and do the Cowboys crack the list next in the nation?
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.